So does Jordy have an appropriate relationship with any woman in his life?
Oh, not at all.
Okay. I just wanted to clear that up right away.
Yeah.
That said,
I mean, he's never tried to rape Dr. Crusher.
That we've seen.
That we've seen.
Although I feel like if he had tried to rape Dr. Crusher,
she would have crushed him.
Yeah, there you go. So,
you know, I was very disappointed in this episode because the second you say, oh, well, Ben Vereen's going to guest star and he doesn't dance with Dr. Crusher. Like, I was waiting for that.
That was a missed opportunity.
You know, but I actually, so this is an episode I saw when it aired.
Okay.
So I didn't remember anything other than, you know, Jordy and the machine, and he was, you know, so I didn't remember what the plot of it was.
Right.
And I really didn't remember any of the bits with his family. But I really like this episode so far. This is the first good season 7 episode.
Yeah, I like this one. I think it's probably an average episode.
It makes no goddamn sense. But
I mean, it makes enough sense. It holds together well enough. I think that it's the show. I don't know anything about baseball, but I think this is right. Batting a 500.
There were 500 scenes in the episode, so yes.
Yeah. It's not a great episode. It's not a terrible episode. It's competent. It's well done. Everybody sort of acts like themselves.
Yeah.
It's a good episode.
It's a good episode.
I do wonder if it was the right decision to have Jordy become an insane person, but
I wouldn't call him insane. I would just say
single-minded.
Single-minded. He's dealing with grief. He's in the denial stage of grief.
Yes, as we saw in Gambit Part 1 with Riker.
Hmm.
But I do wonder about this because I think that the main crux of the episode rests on a premise that is faulty. And the premise is this. You know, we've even commented on this in the past that it's nice that the crew members of the Next Generation, when someone comes to with some crazy thing where they saw a Yeti in 10 forward and no one else saw it that was making martinis, like they're all very interested in figuring out what exactly is going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's always been the case throughout the show's 6 seasons.
Even when Barclay says something weird happened, I can't explain, wake the crew up, they wake up.
They go for it. But in this episode, when Jordy says, I think that my mother is still alive, suddenly everyone is like, you're crazy. You need to shut up.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm surprised that nobody clicked that this was obviously an alien using Jordy's mom's form. Because how many goddamn times have we seen something like that? Like,
well, it
again, that was the thing. Like, they could say, look, obviously there, you know, because that would make sense. Obviously, there's something more going on here. There's something on the planet.
Yeah.
Whether it's this ship or not is still up for debate. But, you know, we've seen plenty of aliens who have the ability to read minds and take a form that you're more comfortable with. Or,
yeah,
we've seen plenty of computers with, you know, the same kind of thing. Like, there are a dozen things that this could be. And, you know, yes, it actually being Jordy's mother is the least likely of those. But, you know, nobody else broaches the possibility. Like, it really seems that, you know, until the very end, it's either Jordy's mom or he's crazy.
Right. And that's really my one problem with the episode is that no one seems to broach any other possibility. And they do so only because I think that the writer wanted to come up with a different spin on this story. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
because we've had this a lot of times before where one person is seeing something or experiencing something or hearing something that no one else is seeing or hearing or experiencing.
Yeah.
And they go to the crew and they go to the captain and all these people and they all, you know, Avengers assemble in the observation lounge. And they figure it out and they go, okay, well, we'll figure this out. You know, we'll believe you. And
someone finds a molecular trace of something and
right.
They slowly start pulling the thread. Yeah.
And in this episode, they sort of pull the rug out from that entirely for no real reason other than I think that they wanted to come up with a different spin on this plot line.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, I understand that the show has been on for a long time at this point. It's going to be more difficult to come up with new and fresh takes on ideas. But at the same time, the show is showing a lack of consistency in areas which I don't think it should be showing a lack of consistency.
It's the kind of thing where maybe a season one Geordi that wasn't the chief engineer and that, you know, was still kind of really weird with women and, you know, was just this strange guy, saw something strange, like, that would be one thing. But this is, again, six seasons later when every single, you know, member of the crew, you know, trusts Geordi with their lives and vice versa, you know, and know that even in the most, you know, craziest of stress, he's not going to make something up out of whole cloth.
Right. And but that's what everyone seems to think or say to him. I mean, Riker says it. Picard kind of says it. Troy certainly says it in that scene in her office where they're doing their little therapy session. And yeah, I get it, but I think at the same time, having everybody be against Geordi and having it be just about grief, I think is the wrong way to go.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if they had done something a bit different with it, say, actually have wreckage from the ship or something, you know, the ship just disappears.
I was going to say, and that's the thing, like, it doesn't... Nothing happens. You know what I mean? Like where – so it literally just disappears and no one will ever find it in the series, in the franchise.
Right.
That's just what we're supposed to understand.
I guess, yeah.
Which, you know, again, the episode, you know, makes it clear that this does happen sometimes. You know, they mention that there are other ships that have disappeared under similar circumstances.
Well, how often has the Enterprise gone missing?
Yeah,
like this?
And I think they make it clear that they're not like it's not a sign of anything more than deep space travel is just sometimes very dangerous, you know. And you know, again, it's horrible, and you know, the Federation has done everything it can to prevent this from happening, but sometimes a ship's going to go through the cracks, and you know, that just happens. But that's not dramatically satisfying, especially when Geordi, you know, Geordi and Data disobey direct orders in order to, you know.
Right, right. It's not dramatically satisfying because they don't find it and nothing ever happens. And I think that, you know, it is nice that Data is the one to, if not believe him, at least help him.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that Data necessarily believes him, but I think that Data believes that Geordi believes it.
Well, you know something? I mean, last week, Data tortured Geordi, so he's really got some fucking splaining to do.
Yeah, is this just Data's way to make some amends, do you think?
I like the way that they make it clear that Data's more worried about the fact that if he doesn't, you know, play along with Geordi, like, it's going to hurt Geordi. And, you know, even though this is a crazy thing that Data doesn't even believe, you know, well, let's let him go on his lark. And, you know, because, you know, that'll be much less of a consequence than if I just let him do this on his own, you know?
I think that's true. And I think it also goes a long way towards showing Data's loyalty towards his friend. I mean, the Data Geordi friendship in the show is one of the more understated character beats, I think. But it's always kind of there in the background. And, you know, this is really only the one of the episodes to really make a big deal about it, I think. You know, they've always been friends.
I wish
Geordi
had made more of it.
I do and I don't. I mean, I can see... Well, why do you say that?
Just because I think both of the... Geordi has always been a character that, I mean, I liked Geordi a lot as a kid, but just because I loved Reading Rainbow.
Sure.
You know, it was because he was played by LeVar Burton. Like, I really, you know, going into the series, didn't really remember much more of him than he had the visor. And I can only say a few more things about him now. Like, I do feel like, you know, the relationship between him and Data is one of the more... And his friendship with Worf. Like, the three of them have this, like... I don't know, they're almost secondary characters in some way, as in they're not the highest of the, you know... They're both very, you know, important in their things, but they are still... You know, they're not the captain or the first mate. You know, they aren't in any of the really sexy positions, you know? And, you know, but the three of them... I don't know. I like the fact that the three of them just kind of pal out. Like, they just kind of – they're all little – you know, they're three of the more misfitty characters, in, you know, just even just on a physical level compared to everybody else. You know, Troy has no real conflicts with being Betazoid, you know, and everybody else is fully human and, you know, completely, you know – dealing well. And
I do think that's actually interesting in a way, though, because I had never really thought about those three characters being similar – They're all sort of socially awkward in a sense. They all sort of don't really fit in.
They're little fish out of water. Yeah. Data for obvious reasons, Worf for obvious reasons, and Geordi, you know, again, he has his...
He's a hapless virgin.
He's a hapless version, and he has this blindness, and they're, you know, neither of them are crippling, but, and he certainly hasn't had any problems in his career because of either of those, but at the same time, I think he hangs out with Worf and Data because the three of them understand each other, you know, or at least don't have, you know, they feel a little less uncomfortable, I think, around each other. I feel like they can relax.
I think that's true, and I think that, you know, there's a couple things that this makes me think of. Number one is that if you like this sort of friendship in Star Trek, you are really going to like a friendship in Star Trek Deep Space Nine,
aww,
which is awesome and very, very homosocial.
Okay.
If that's the right word.
It's the right word.
So be excited for that. And also, I think that, you know, I can see your point as to why you would like to have seen more of the friendship. But I kind of like the fact that it's sort of in the background and they never really make a big deal about
it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like,
you know, it's just very understated, and it just feels like part of the, you know, sort of life of the ship in a way. And we kind of check in on it from time to time.
Yeah.
And it's more like a, it's not really a friendship. It's more like a sketch of a friendship, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Where we don't know what the particulars are, but we know that they're friends, and we see them being friendly and kind of hanging out, and Geordi stopping by and talking to Data, and Data being confused by Geordi and Ten Forward and all of these things. I think it works out really well.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, that's why this, I mean, it, for obvious reasons, I think that Interface brought the friendship to the fore more than a lot of other episodes, because, you know, Geordi would rely on Data in this context. I mean, everyone's telling him that his mother is dead. His father is telling him that his mother is dead. You know, his father is having a memorial service for his wife, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
What, they didn't make it clear, but I assume they were still married or supposed to be still married.
Yeah, that was the implication I got.
So, also we find out that Geordi has a sister. Okay. Maybe that explains his weird...
What I thought was hilarious, how he said, oh, mom's always trying to, you know, get me a girlfriend. Well, I mean, I would feel like a Geordi, at least of a few seasons ago, would jump on every single opportunity. Like, oh my god, she sounds great. Is she breathing?
I mean, I guess so. But I guess there is a point
where
he wants to do things on his own. I mean, he is an engineer, so maybe he wants to fix himself. I don't know. But I think that what I like about it is that we do see Geordi relying on Data in this episode. And Data relying on Geordi, too, you know. There's the really nice scene where Geordi goes to Data's quarters and sort of kind of browbeats him into asking about his mother and how he's feeling.
Yeah.
And you know, Data doesn't really get it. And
it's
you know, they've done scenes like that before. I mean, they did scenes like that with Data and his erstwhile girlfriend, now that I think about it, maybe.
Oh, God, that episode.
You know, it's fine.
It's fine.
But it's just a nice thing to see, and it's nice to see Geordi be a little bit... It's nice to see Geordi get a different plot line, because he always kind of has the same plot line.
Yeah.
So he gets to act a little differently. He gets to kind of flesh out his character a little bit. We get to see him in some sort of distress. And we get to see Data being helpful in his way. You know, because Data is not a character that's going to know the right thing to say to make someone feel better necessarily.
Yeah.
But Data can do things to make people feel better.
Yeah. And Data will give you his attention, and he will listen, and he won't be bothered by, you know, you being kind of irrational, you know. That you know, I mean, this is in the, we'll see this more in the next episode, you know, the scene with Riker and Troy where, you know, they're just kind of lashing out at each other in their grief, and they know they're doing it, and they know, you know, and because the two of them know they're just fucked up and confused. Like, Data will never have his feelings hurt by that.
Right,
You know, and, you know, which, even though Data fully has emotions, but that's a different story.
We could talk about that every single episode of the show, but we have to give it a rest at some point. I think the really pivotal scene in the episode is when Data appears in the room when Geordi is about to use the device to go down by himself. And it's been telegraphed the entire episode. You know, that's why it started out, right? That he was going to have this issue, that they turned up the gain or whatever the hell they were doing.
And
his neural feedback unit was feedbacking into his brain and causing him to have bad
dreams. This is
making
me really nervous about the Oculus Rift.
Oh, you should be. This is exactly what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
They have to remove your eyes, actually.
And they, like, your hands will burn if you like it.
Yeah. So they've already kind of established that this is a dangerous thing to be doing to some degree. And so when Geordi is down there getting himself in the little suit and everything, and I also like the fact that he has to be blind to do it.
Yeah.
Which he can't really see what's going on, yeah, with his nice little touch. That we're like, no, what are you doing, Geordi? Like, this is a bad idea. And then Data appears, and we think Data's going to stop him. And Data, of course, just kind of quietly sidles over and goes, okay, I'll help you out. And it's just this really nice moment of connection between the two of them.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice way for Data to show that he does care about Geordi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that we should entirely ignore the events of Descent.
I love this moral of this episode. Seriously, though, this is like, okay, well, we're getting back to what, you know, what this show really is.
Yeah, yeah.
Because liaisons, Jesus. Jesus. I've been really hit bad by this season so far. We're only 3 episodes in, man.
You know, they always start bad, though. I mean, season 4 notwithstanding, they normally start pretty, yeah, bad. So, well, 5th season didn't start bad either. 3rd season didn't start that bad. Okay, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm obviously just making excuses here. But
we had 2 of the worst episodes of Star Trek in a fucking row.
Yeah, that was not great. But this was a pretty good week. And so I think that at the end of the day, what the other lacking part of this episode is, what is the message here? Like, what are they trying to say with all of this?
Yeah, because it's kind of, on the one hand, like a, you need to be able to, you know, accept death and, you know, learn to say goodbye and, you know, take the moment of, you know, because Geordi, you know, they do make a point of Geordi regrets that, you know, He his mom was in town and he didn't, you know, make the time to visit her because he kind of felt like, oh, well, you know, we've got all that. I'll see her at Christmas, you know, and he's not going to see her at Christmas. And Jesus, you know, I could, you know, there is an amount of that, you know, take, you know, live life to the fullest. Tell your friends you love them. You know, Eric, I love you.
Oh, I love you, Richard.
Aw. And listeners,
we love you.
I wasn't going to go there, but okay. but at the same time, I mean, he saves this now. Whatever the alien is, it's even sketchier than the, you know, random alien normally is. Obviously, it's just a plot beat in a way. Like, the episode doesn't really care that we care or not whether we care about these aliens. But if it weren't for Geordi's single-mindedness, he wouldn't have gone to. But at the same time, like, Geordi doesn't have. His mother doesn't die in this episode.
Yeah.
But let's posit this. He's just going in this probe normally. Everything in Geordi's life is going fine. He is still going to contact this alien presence. So what does he contact them as?
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it. Like, what is the episode if Geordi's mother is not dead?
So she's Dr. Leah Brahms. And then, you know, he's saying, I saw Dr. Leah Brahms on the thing. You know, what she's doing. Like,
in a way, I guess it was a bad decision for the alien to take the form of his mother. Because
yeah,
if the alien had taken the form of someone else, everyone probably would have been like, what the hell? Let's figure what's going on here.
And why the hell didn't the alien it's another episode where if the alien had just said, like, look, we're beings from a different dimension and we got trapped on here and here's what we need to do. Like, Geordi would have immediately reported to the captain and they would say, all right, what are we going to do to fix this problem? And they would have fixed it 15 minutes in.
Well, there's a running theme in Star Trek, which is that interdimensional beings are dicks. So,
yeah, that's been going since the original series.
Yeah, so I think it's just still.
That's like since the Cage.
It's
man.
Another link in that chain, I think. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that, you know, but again, I mean, this is sort of nitpicking it because there has to be a plot, right?
Yeah.
And all plots are constructed. And
yeah, but I mean, to be fair, though, the series has done better jobs of that.
That is true.
You know, again, even if we know that, you know, obviously all of this is an episode where science fiction is used to explore grief. And, you know, what if you had one more opportunity to say goodbye? You know, and all of those things. Again, this is not the first, you know, story to do this. This is a theme that, you know, humanity does need and want to revisit, you know, for obvious psychological reasons. And so it's fine that it's doing that, but, you know, season 4 would have made it a better version of this, I guess. You know, it's It's a very good – I feel like we're going to have the phrase great season 7 episode and have it very mean something very specific, you know? This is a great season 7 episode.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you know, I have not made any secret of the fact that Tapestry was the last great episode of the show. Yeah. Now, I'm – you know, that's sort of – hedging the bets a little bit. I think that there are some very good episodes in season
and I can't
7.
And I really liked this episode, you know, again.
No, I liked it too.
It was fun to watch. It's cool to watch. There's a lot of, you know, nice little scenes. The scenes where he's like looking in the reflection, you know, and when he's picking up the thing, you know, like all those are really cool done and some really nice physical acting from, you know, Mr. Burden, you know, and all of that stuff. Like, it's a good episode that maybe could have been a great episode, and I'm sad that the series has no more great episodes, maybe, but...
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that is maybe kind of upsetting about that a little bit is, and I'm saying that what you're saying is upsetting, just upsetting in general, is that, you know, I don't know if the show really brought on a lot of new writers in season 7.
Yeah.
And maybe they should have. I don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of speculating because...
I mean, hell, you know, use season 7 as your farm leagues for writers that you want to put onto DS9. Because obviously they're... But, you know, like, you would think that well, that would have made sense.
Well,
but
it's one of those things where, you know, what everyone talks about with season 7, and I feel like we're probably going to be talking a lot about season 7 in the same kind of context that we talked about season 3 of the original series.
Yeah.
Just because that was the final season and there was a lot going on, is that... You know, Rick Berman even made a point of saying that, look, there was a lot going on in season 7. You know, they had season 7, they had season 2 of Deep Space Nine going on, they were breaking Star Trek Voyager, and they were preparing the first Star Trek Next Generation movie.
Yeah.
So they had a lot of stuff going on. And
did they now, let me just, at this point, did they know this was going to be their final season? Or was
at this point they did.
At this point, they're fairly, we're closing the doors, we're just writing our last 20 episodes. Okay.
Yeah. And so... I don't know if we can be that uncharitable towards it because I think that, you know, and what we can talk about the season and kind of the show as a whole, I think, you know, when we get to the last TNG episode that we do. But, you know, I don't want to get premature in this discussion, but I think that it's something to keep in mind, at least, that the best days of the show are behind it at this point. And I say this not to make you worried about what's coming down the pike in the next 11 weeks, but... more to mitigate your expectations, I guess, about what you're going to be seeing.
Again, it's clear that they're just kind of – we have a couple of loose ends, a couple of things we'd like to see, a couple – you know, we really didn't – you know, Geordi's parents have been mentioned. We knew that he came from a long, proud Starfleet family. You know, we knew he's that – you know, both of his parents, we knew that he grew up as a military brat. We've never actually seen his parents. It's cool to see his parents. I like his parents, you know, they're.
Yeah.
But
I think you're right. I think tying up loose ends is a perfect way to look at it.
Yeah.
You know, so far this season, we've already had Lore, the final appearance of Lore, and now we're having Geordi's parents. What else is going to happen?
It's like at the beginning of writing the season, they just got a big board and they said, all right, you know, everything that we haven't finished resolving. All right, you know, let's pick 20 of these and which do we want to do?
Right.
Okay. You know, all right, you know, you're right. We never have seen Geordi's parents, you know. Let's deal with that, you know. All right, let's kill off Lore.
Yeah.
I bet they popped champagne that day.
I certainly hope they did.
Yeah, but poor Brent Spiner was out of work afterwards. He never got to be on the show anymore once they killed off the character.
I wouldn't be so sure about that.
Wait, does Lore come back?
No, Lore doesn't come back.
Thank God.
No, but that doesn't mean that Brent Spiner can't play other characters. And I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, you should be worried.
Oh, fuck.
I will give this one 6 probes.
I don't want to read. No, this was a 7 episode for me.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the second two-parter of the season already, Gambit Part 1, which I...
like.
Enjoyed.
You know, as I was watching this, I was thinking, I really don't... We always have... And we talk about this every time. There's a two-parter, but we always have a little bit of weirdness on the two-parter because, number one, there is a bit of an asymmetry. Do you know what happens in Gambit 2?
I have vague memories
of it.
Yeah,
at least more... You know, like...
For various reasons, season 7 is not one that I revisit a lot.
But, you know, either way, like, you tend to know, like, you know, for major twists, you know, where it... where it's going to end up.
I knew that Picard wasn't dead.
Yeah, you know, like stuff like that.
I mean, so, I'm sure you could have figured that out as well.
But the thing is, you know, knowing that Picard isn't dead, you know, it was still a surprise. They were still able to keep a bit of suspense until it's revealed, because what's the context of that reveal, you know? And even when they say, well, he's on the ship, it could be one of a dozen reasons, you know. Is he on a Starfleet mission? Is he brainwashed, you know? And it turns out he's just kind of on his own and just kind of running with this. But, I mean, this episode, I feel this wasn't a very deep episode at all, but it was, I liked, it was a good action-y, you know, suspenseful, you know, thrillery episode mystery.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised at how much I liked that, and even maybe how much I admired this episode. And we'll talk about this, of course, but I really feel like this is a really well-constructed episode in a lot of ways. We've been talking a lot about how the show has felt like it hasn't had much restraint.
Yeah.
And I really do think that Gambit Part 1 showed a tremendous amount of restraint. In a strange way.
I was going to say, it's one of those where, I mean, we had us in a cantina. We saw some weird aliens. You know, there's a ship where everyone looks like David Bowie. You know, like, there's these lots of ridiculous, you know, over-the-top things in this episode at the same time as it's showing all of the characters at their best.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's very well written, number one.
The moment when...
The dialogue, I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The moment with Picard and Riker first seeing each other and having to, like, without telegraphing a single signal, come up with a plan and run with it and pick up each other's cues. Like,
this is them at the top of their game.
Exactly.
And it's just,
you know,
fun to see.
It's great.
It reminded me a lot of sort of like Wrath of Khan, for instance.
Given the outfits on the ship. Yes.
But even just in that sense where they have to come up with secret plans on the fly,
yeah,
and sort of come up with things, you know, and I like that. And, you know, there are so many ways that this episode could have gone very wrong.
Yeah.
You know, they could have wanted to hold the Picard reveal until the end of the episode. And I think that would have been a mistake, because it would have made the first part a waiting exercise.
Yeah.
Because you know that Picard's going to show up at some point. So, you know what? Let's get that out of the way in the first 20 minutes. That's a good decision. I like the fact that it kind of starts in the middle of things. We don't know why Picard was on this mission. We don't know what Picard is doing. We don't know where Picard is. We don't know why they're on this planet. We just kind of get them. We get to see.
You know, I like that the episode begins with, you know, Troy kind of in mid-conversation trying to seduce this bartender, which, you know, she's done before, the guy at the shipyard, and just utterly failing. I like that.
That's a nice callback.
Oh, yeah. You know, and it's funny. I do like seeing Troy doing her subterfuge. I like that, you know, Crusher just calmly gives a gun, you know. I like the whole, well, you know, he impregnated your sister, you know, that's my sister. Like, that was great. You know, this is, again, we've talked about whether the series doesn't really do comedy well, but it does little moments like these well. Like, it doesn't do comedic set pieces well, but it will.
I don't
do
think
bits.
That it does an entire comedy episode well. I don't think that it can sustain that kind of thing for 45 minutes. And frankly, I don't know that many shows can.
No.
But I think that you're right. They do these little comic bits very well. And I think that the writers can write them in these little 5-minute chunks, and they work really well.
Yeah.
And the actors know how to play them exactly right.
And it's less, you know, comedic and more just like, it's intensely satisfying to see one of the main cast doing something cool. Like, we will never get tired of Crusher pointing a phaser at somebody. Like, that's never, you know, Worf being a badass is never tiresome. You know, Riker being cool and suave is never boring, you know?
No, and frankly, I mean, if you go through the catalog of things that this crew has done in the past 6 years, you're talking about so many things that a random bartender in a bar somewhere on some backwater planet in the middle of nowhere is not going to stop them.
Yeah.
So I like that. I think it's just there's a nice construction to the entire episode that it's very tight. It's very sort of, you know, there's the very beginning of it. You mentioned we were talking about Interface, the scene with Troy and Riker, where Riker is sort of indulging his grief about Picard being dead. And you know, sort of saying, no, we're going to go off and we're going to find who did this and we're not going to rest until we, you know, find the man who killed my father and all this
stuff. We're not going to the, I'm not doing the memorial service. I'm not going to go to it. And, you know, she yells at him for being a child about it.
And we don't see Troy yell very often. And so, you know, I think on the one hand, you could criticize it for being like, oh, it's a shrill woman yelling. But I think that would miss the point.
No, because
I think
it yells at she yells at him from a very – in a way, it kind of mirrors the scene from Best of Both Worlds where Guinan is talk and basically gives him a dressing down. I mean, this is Troy giving him a dressing down. And again, you know, they're very similar scenes. They do have very similar merits just as you need to just – get over yourself, and you know, we're all upset. This was somebody that we all loved, you know, and are going to miss deeply. And you know, again, you know, we could either all feel sorry for ourselves separately, or we could, you know, come to, again, this is Troy. Whenever Troy or Riker has a very big problem, they go to the other, you know, and you know, I think a lot of the anger, you know, obviously a lot of the anger from her end is the fact that he's, you know, refusing to come to her, you know, and refusing to, you know, he's refusing, number one, to comfort her. She's not getting any, you know, from him, and, you know, he's not allowing her to, you know, to help him out, you know, and so it's more, it's not even anger, it's frustration.
It's frustration, yeah, and I think
it's a lot of things.
But I think it's also calculated frustration because she knows what to do to get him, you know, out of this a little bit at least.
But at the same time, I think it's important that he does end by saying, yeah, but still justice does have to be served. And that's a point that, you know, we can't deny.
Right. I mean, I don't think that anybody should get away with killing the
captain
of the flagship of Starfleet.
As he points out, like, you know, what, you know, if what happened was just a random bar fight killed Captain Picard, we need to find out who was responsible.
You know? Yeah. And I think that that's a really, I think that your link to Best of Both Worlds is really interesting because the episode is full of little resonances like that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's even, I'm even thinking about like nicely realized details in the episode. When Riker, after that scene with Troy and after he's on the bridge and, you know, Worf tells him that there's a message coming in from an admiral. He says, I'll take it in the ready room.
Okay.
He doesn't say my ready room.
Yeah.
He doesn't say ready room. He says the ready room. Very pointedly. It's not a big deal. No one says anything about it. I think you could not notice it at all.
I didn't.
But it's just a nice little moment because it tells you exactly where Riker's head is.
Yeah.
He's not captain of this ship.
Yeah.
This is not his ship. He hasn't made that mental adjustment yet. And so when he gets permission to run down who killed the captain, I think that's the moment when he starts to take real control of the ship in a way.
And he has something to do. Again, in Best of Both Worlds, one of the Guinan scene was in a way, basically you're saying like, look, I know you're sad, but you don't have time to be sad because, you know, you can either feel sorry for your grief and let the Borg kill all of us, or you can at least, you know, you need to put that to the side for now and deal with it later because we don't have that luxury right now. We're in the middle of war. Troy is saying something different. Troy is kind of saying, you know, you need to deal with this now because it is time to deal with this now.
Right.
It is an appropriate time, and he's looking for something to do in a way to take his mind off of that.
And I think her point is twofold. I think it's not healthy for him to sort of push this down the memory hole, and I think he needs to deal with it and move on, or at least start to come to terms with it. I don't think anybody ever completely moves on. But I also think that she doesn't come right out and say it, but I think that the other implication in her little speech is that, you know, for intents and purposes, whether or not Starfleet is going to make him the permanent captain of the Enterprise or not, he has a responsibility to the crew now. He is the figurehead in a sense. He is the one who they will look to.
I mean, just as how when Data ends up with command of the ship, you know, after Riker disappears, I mean, and everybody has to listen, you know, does listen to Data just because, you know, that's where the chain of command goes. Right now, the chain of command is left with Riker and he still has a ship to run.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think that, you know, frankly, his decision to go on the away team, while it's on the one hand, it's the way that the episode needs to go because they need to get Riker onto the ship for the episode to happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel it doesn't feel like a cheat. It feels like something that he would actually do.
Well, because number one, Riker always goes on the away missions. I mean, anyway, but they finally remember that one of the first officer's job is to say, no, you can't go on the, because Data does that, he doesn't push back at all because, obvious reason, even Data can tell what Riker wants to do.
Right.
But,
and why he wants to do it, yeah, more importantly, I think.
And that it is the right thing, to let him go. But at the same time, you don't necessarily go on the away mission if you're the captain for this exact reason.
Right. Because what happens, of course, is that Riker gets kidnapped by the space pirates.
Yeah.
And then we get the second half of the episode, which is really just a completely different episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that has a few different arcs to it. I mean, number one, again, at first, for the first few minutes, you're not quite sure why exactly is Picard on this. Again, is he brainwashed in some way? Is he, does Starfleet know about this mission? I don't think they do because, when the Admiral says, go and find, if Picard were on a secret mission, I feel like the Admiral would have had a different conversation with him. And doesn't Picard say, he just happened to be, in the area and they just stumbled upon this?
I think
that's kind of what happened.
It seems like the implication of the explanation was that Picard was on leave or something doing some archaeology and something happened to him and he got captured.
Yeah, everybody's looking for, and Picard just has, his dorky archaeology, interest in this thing. There's something with one of the artifacts. And, while the episode isn't a twisty episode, it doesn't turn out to be based on plot twists, really. But we do still have this mystery of, what exactly are they looking for and why?
Right.
Which could go in a couple dozen different directions again. But
yeah, and I will say, we always have this conversation when we talk about two-parters. And I think this is the first two-parter that I really don't remember what happens in the second part. I mean, like I said, I've probably only ever seen most of the second season once. So I don't really remember what happens.
Yeah.
So it may be terrible. I don't know.
I mean, in a way, it only sort of matters because, let's face it, there's a, it could be a weapon. It could be a source of energy. It's a MacGuffin. It doesn't really matter what it is. It's a MacGuffin because now we suddenly have...
Frankly, it could be the Romulan Rosetta Stone.
Really, exactly.
Have no idea.
But it doesn't matter. There's a bad guy who's dressed, flamboyantly and... we have this weird crew of weird aliens and there's this Romulan and what's her agenda, and all of that. And, it's interesting to watch because I know it's going to be, all of what unfolded on screen was really enjoyable to watch and exciting.
Yeah, this was a really fun episode and it was a really enjoyable episode to watch. And the show hasn't felt like this in a while.
Yeah, like I said, it may not be the deepest episode. It just has some stuff about grief that, In Your Face did just as well.
But I don't think that the show needs to be deep as long as it is fully realized.
Well, that's it. Because, again, all of the characters are acting like all of the characters. And, we haven't had the captain, disappearing and dying in a while. And, I'm cool with this episode.
Yeah, because so many episodes in the sixth season and sort of even in the very beginning of the seventh season have frankly been half-baked. And this is really, I think, the first episode of the season that feels like a fully realized, fully thought-out episode of The Next Generation.
Which is funny because I can't tell you how this episode was an hour long and how this is going to be a two-parter. Like, it doesn't seem like it's big enough for a two-parter, but...
But isn't that kind of the point,
though? It's feeling natural, in a way. Like, that. I guess that...
Because I think it's a misnomer to think that... And I think that the writing staff fell into this as well, which is, I think, how we got Descent.
Yeah,
but that two-parters need to be big, and I don't think they need to be big.
Yeah, again, we're seeing this is television again. From what you tell me about Deep Space Nine, and from where I know television goes, in 5-10 years from now, this is going to that. This is going to maybe we just want to have stories breathe over a couple episodes, and that moment at the end where they're hitting the engine of the Enterprise, like, what's going to happen? It could be anything. They could do some, while they're never going to destroy the Enterprise, they could do some very bad damage to it. Certainly that's in the possibility at this point.
Right. And I guess, I think that's a good point because I think that if you put this episode and this season into context, this is 1993, 1994.
Yeah.
So what was going on then in television? Well, you had Babylon 5 starting, which, a lot of people sort of look as that as sort of the precursor to serialized television. I don't necessarily agree with that because I don't think the Babylon 5 really influenced anybody at all and is mostly forgotten at this point.
Yeah.
And for good reason because...
But, I mean, it's indicative of a general trend. I mean, I know we've been... A lot of people have been talking about Friends lately, and I know you don't really like the show,
no.
But, you know, one of the things I find interesting about the show is how it is very kind of... There are a ton of arcs in the series.
Yeah.
Like... A lot of them based on, you know, the characters' various relationships, but, you know, the characters' relationships do change from episode to episode, you know, and they have jobs that, you know, go through a few episodes and things like that. So, I mean, even if just Friends was about as mainstream of a sitcom, you know, that you just watch and, you know, really just laugh and not really think about, and even that found that it needed to stretch, you know, character beats over a season, over, you know, multiple episodes. And I don't know, it's interesting to see television wanting to do more, and this is a indicator of that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what that makes me think of, or what that makes me realize, is that Gambit would work fine as a standalone episode. If you just tuned into this and you watched it without ever having seen the show before, it would work. But as with so much of the best episodes of the show, or even frankly, I think the maybe not even the best episodes of the show, but the best or more fully realized episodes of the show, that there's a lot of resonances that you get if you've seen all of the show before. You know, all of the stuff with Picard and Riker and Data, you know, would work if you had never seen the show before and this was your first time watching it. But You know, all of the backstory and having all of the knowledge of the past six seasons makes what's happening to these characters and what they're going through and sort of how they're acting right now mean so much more.
I mean, put it this way, you know, everybody, you know, anybody who's never seen the show, you know, oh, the captain, the beloved captain of the ship is dead. Like, that's a big, everyone knows why that's a big thing. But, and everybody can understand why his first mate would be devastated by this, but having seen the past six seasons, we know that Riker's particularly devastated because he... I mean, I'm thinking about how a lot of it remember... I think about Edith Keeler saying to Spock, like, you know, you're always by his side, you know? You're
right.
Always, you know, that's where Riker partially defines himself as not just the first mate of the Enterprise, but as Picard's right hand. You know, he is... utterly, Picard is his compass in a way, you know, he will do anything as long as it's, you know, for Picard, and to lose that is utterly losing every sense of direction that he had. You know, there is no, you know, for Riker, getting command of the Enterprise by the captain dying is the worst thing in the possible world. Very different from a character who would see this as an opportunity for promotion. We know why, you know, Riker would never do that. A first time viewer might not.
And I think also, you know, this is again why the episode, I think, is so much more subtle than people give it credit for, is that, you know, number one, I think that the scene where Galen slash Picard sneaks into Riker's room and, you know, Riker is sort of eager to be told what to do.
Yeah.
And not eager to be told what to do because he can't figure out what to do on his own. I mean, he got this far on his own, but because he respects Picard enough to know that Picard's
his alpha.
He know, like, Picard knows what to do better than Riker. And Riker would get out of this situation fine.
Yeah.
If he got captured by these people and Picard was not on the ship and we had an entirely different episode, he would get out of this fine.
We've seen him get out of
situations. We've seen him get out of stuff like this fine. But because Picard is there, Riker can sort of, I don't know, relax a little bit.
Well,
maybe.
In a way, because, you know, now it's not his plan. It's he's got to, you know, implement Picard's plan. And he's really good at he's better at implementing Picard's plan than he is at coming up with his plans, which is not to knock Riker's plan skills.
Right. And then I also, that also makes me think about how the captain of the space pirates gets control, which is, he flat out says he killed the captain.
So, I would say he's got these pain. I would say this series is really liking, like, you know, mental pain, you know, you know, whatever things, you know. But
But what I'm saying is that there's a symmetry there, of course, because Riker was in control of the Enterprise because everyone thought Picard was dead, and this guy's in control of this ship because he actually killed his captain.
Yeah, but you know,
I don't want to go so far as to say this is the flip side of the Enterprise.
But in a way, nobody on the Romulan, you know, she. you know, says, oh, I know him better than anybody. You know, I know him, but I have things. Yeah. So she obviously, you know, she's good at following his orders, but she's also, you know, you can tell she's waiting for the moment when he slips up and she can finally, you know, she, you can tell that she is, you know, patient to the degree of years. She's a Romulan.
Right.
Come on. But,
and frankly, who even knows if her pain thing is real?
Yeah, exactly. And certainly the captain wouldn't.
Right.
You know, but yeah, like she,
it seems to me that she's there for some reason.
Yeah.
And what that reason is, I don't know, but it would not surprise me if she was actually in control of the situation.
I mean, there was a, you know, I feel like the artifact is of particular interest to Romulans for some reason. I don't know if that was established or just, you know, her being sneaky.
Well, they said at some point that, that the planet that they were taking these from were like,
Proto-Romulan, yeah.
Yeah, we're offshoots of some sort of Proto-Romulans, which, okay.
You know, but the point is, you know, she's waiting for the moment to get the drop on her captain. You know, it's you know, and the captain has his control of his staff through fear and pain rather than loyalty and respect, you know. So, yeah, it is the dark mirror of the Enterprise, you know. Hell, you know, you talk about Khan, even Khan inspired fear, inspired respect and loyalty in his career.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something even this guy can't even do, you know?
Yeah, well, he just wants money, basically.
Yeah.
And I also think that, you know, not for nothing, but when the Romulan goes to see Picard and they sort of have this conversation,
yeah,
and they're sort of feeling each other out, I mean, that's a very Romulan thing to do. But, you know, Picard is able to play that game very well, and I don't think that Riker would necessarily be able to play that game very well.
No.
You know, I don't think that Riker has skill, but I don't know if he necessarily has a lot of guile.
Well, he's not a, yeah, he's not an undercover man in the way that, you know, Troy can be or that Picard can even be. I mean, obviously,
yeah,
you know, Picard has a completely other identity. Riker does not. I mean, I think that's very significant. You know, there's not much that they can hide the fact that he's a, you know, Starfleet officer. He's in his uniform, but, you know, other than making him seem a little more of a rebel than he really is, you know, and maybe he's got, you know, he is who he is.
Right, right.
You know, I don't know.
I think the last thing to talk about this with this episode before we wrap up for this week is sort of Data's plot line, which isn't really a plot line. It's just a couple of scenes. But this is only the second time we've ever seen, you know, seen Data really in control of a starship,
yeah,
before. And what I like about this is that you can obviously tell that, you know, you brought this up in Redemption Part 2, but he's obviously learned a lot of his lessons from how to act as a captain from Picard. And I think you see that in this episode, but I think it's an older version of Data, and it's one where he's not mimicking Picard so much as he is sort of, you know, he mimics a couple of his sort of movements where he's sitting in the chair,
yeah,
with,
I mean,
his
that
hands
was,
up. And,
but at the same time, like, when he leaves the meeting, because this is like, here's what needs to happen, you know, you're dismissed. And that's not how Picard really, you know, ends his meetings, you know. He
wants to hear from everybody, and Data is, he did that in Redemption Part 2, I think, to some degree, but in this episode, he's not doing that at all.
Yeah. And, none of the you know, senior staff, you know, have any problem with Data taking charge in this way. They understand why he's doing what he's doing. You know, we don't have the thing that his first mate did about, you know, well, you don't care about humans. They know how much Data cares, you know, because they all forgot about the events of Descent. And,
What?
We know how much Data cares about everybody because they all forgot about the events of Descent where he didn't care about anybody. So,
What's Descent?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think that it's interesting to me that Data is this kind of captain, though, that he is so dismissive. And I don't know why it surprises me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, but I don't think it does surprise me because, you know, he's calculated everything, and this is what has the biggest odds of success, you know?
Yeah, I suppose that's true. But at the same time, Data does miss things. I mean, he's not perfect.
Yeah, but I mean, this particular situation is an immoral situation right now. You know, Riker's missing. They've got to find this ship. You know, it is purely scientific, real, and tactical, really.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. Well, I guess we'll have to see what happens in Part 2.
I can't wait.
I mean, this is the second cliffhanger that ends with fire. So, and the first one is, of course, Best of Both Worlds. So,
which was the best of both episodes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I will give this episode
8.
pain receptors. Well, if you would like to share your thoughts about this episode, please do so at the post at trekaboutshow.com.
Don't spoil me because I haven't seen it yet.
Don't spoil me either because I've seen it, but it's probably been 20 years. Don't spoil us on Twitter at trekaboutshow. Don't spoil us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekaboutshow.
Oh, you can spoil on Facebook all you want.
Yeah, Richard doesn't have Facebook. And also, feel free to spoil us with a positive review on iTunes. Next week, we are covering Gambit Part 2 and Phantasms.
Part 1?
No.